This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it, and I find myself staying up late to catch all the action. I can't be dragging the next morning. That's why I go for a 5-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or when my favorite team is playing late. With over 15 flavors to choose from, like watermelon, tropical burst, blue raspberry, peach mango, and more, there's a flavor for everyone. On their website, you have the option to build your own 12-pack or 24-pack and have it delivered right to your door. And if you're out and about, you can always pick up a 5-hour energy shot at your local grocery or convenience store. They're everywhere. 5-hour energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before the next tip-off.
Hey, it's Jim Costa with Cash the Ticket. Mike Valeni and I are all over the tournament again this March. Breakdowns of every region and every game, who are the Cinderellas, and which team's cutting down the nets. Subscribe and listen to Cash the Ticket on the Odyssey app, wherever you get your podcasts.
It's Jacoby Gillespie. McDell, way outside, fake, drives, oh, knocked away! Shooting in, Condon swats it. The other way, Richard. In the side, now it goes to Aberdeen. 7.5 to go. Defending Gillespie, squeezes the trigger and puts it.
All right, well, that didn't go the way I was hoping it would go. You know, for a program that's been all about drama the last few days, Denton, last night, you know, the game anyway, not very dramatic at all. Maryland's season is over, and it seems that there is a pretty good chance they'll be in the market for a new coach as well. Good morning. Denton's here with me. No goals for Ovechkin last night. A crazy opening day Nats extra inning loss to the Phillies. One of the wildest NBA game endings in years last night, and Cooper Flagg put on a performance for the ages last night in Duke's Sweet 16 win over Arizona. All things we will get to at some point during the show today. But we open with Maryland. The game first, and then the Kevin Willard coaching situation. He spoke after the game last night. We'll play a lot of that sound for you. We'll give you guys a chance to weigh in as well this hour. But let's start with the game. Look, the bottom line is this. Florida beat Maryland 87-71. Real quickly, on my podcast yesterday, Tom Lavero predicted Florida 87-72. And Deshaun Harris-Smith had a free throw to make it 87-72 at the end, but he didn't make it. Pretty close, though. Florida beats Maryland 87-71 in the Sweet 16 because they were much better than Maryland in the second half. Florida was actually just the better team, period. Maryland didn't play well, but Florida didn't play great either. And they didn't have the services of one of their best players at 100% for the entire game after he rolled an ankle in the first half. Maryland was a really good team this year, definitely, as they proved, a second weekend of the tournament team. And maybe if the matchup last night had been someone else, maybe they're still playing. I mean, they were certainly good enough this year to beat a lot of teams in the field and probably several of the teams that were still playing last night, but not Florida. They were not good enough last night, and I'm not sure they'd be good enough on most nights to beat a Florida team that has now won 11 games in a row with a margin of victory of 14 points. You know, I talked about all week long, and then yesterday as well, the keys for Maryland last night, starting with rebounding. Maryland has had a recent issue with rebounding. They got out-rebounded in the Big Ten semifinal loss, 81-80, to Michigan by a number that you just don't even see very often, 47-18. Michigan had more offensive rebounds in that game than Maryland had total rebounds. Then they got, you know, killed on the offensive glass in the first round against Grand Canyon. They gave up 13 offensive rebounds. They gave up another 13 offensive rebounds against Colorado State. I knew that this was obvious to anybody that was paying attention that Maryland had to rebound last night, that they would not be able to overcome a big rebounding differential, especially if they gave up a ton of offensive rebounds. The rebound total last night, Florida 42, Maryland 20. Offensive rebounds for the Gators, 15. Nothing else really mattered last night after that. They got crushed, annihilated on the glass ball game. Florida kept Maryland in the game in the first half with 13 turnovers, a lot of them unforced. Maryland had a bunch of turnovers in the first half as well. It was a ragged game. I thought it was an intense game in the first half, back and forth, Maryland down 11, then they came back to take the lead by 3, then Florida went up by 6, and then Florida led by 2 at half. But the rebounding advantage was just too much to overcome. Florida came into the game as one of the best offensive rebounding teams in the country. Maryland knew it. They couldn't do anything about it. Florida was deeper. We knew that. Bench points 27-3. And really, the bench points for Maryland came with the game already decided. At one point, I think it was 26-0. Florida had been shooting the ball better recently than they had in the regular season. They made 11 threes last night, and only two of them by their outstanding guard, Walter Clayton Jr., who is going to be really good at the next level. Super quick release. Their star guard, Walter Clayton Jr., scored a measly 13 points in the game, and Florida still won by 16. He hit a couple of big ones early, but they didn't need him to go off like they did against UConn in the last round, because Will Richard and Elijah Martin went a combined 6-for-13 from behind the arc. They had a bunch of other players pick up the slack. They had 9 other threes made in the game. I personally do not think, this is my opinion, and I don't think anybody will ever know for sure unless we hear a bunch of stories after the fact, that it was complete disarray. They couldn't prep. You know, the drama surrounding Kevin Willard all week was an incredible distraction to the players. I don't personally, though, think that the coaching situation was a major factor in the result of the game last night. Nobody will ever know for sure. Maybe. I don't know. Maybe. I mean, Rodney Rice said it had no, you know, played no role in the outcome of the game afterwards. I just think after watching Florida last night and knowing that Maryland hadn't really played their best basketball recently, they hadn't really played a complete game in a few weeks since the quarterfinal win over Illinois at the Big Ten tournament, I think even if there had been very little drama or no drama this week with the Kevin Willard situation, I don't think the result would have been that much different. I think Florida beats Maryland 8 out of 10 times. 7 out of 10 times. But probably between 7 and 8 out of 10 times. They were just the better team. From Maryland's standpoint, you know, from a positive standpoint, I thought they played with a lot of energy. I think they were sloppy in the first half like Florida was. I mentioned this last week after the first round, the first full round of play on Thursday, that, you know, man, there was just a lot of sloppy play early on, some bad shooting early on. What's the deal with the basketballs? Are they rolling out brand new balls rather than worn-in balls? I don't know, but man, it looked ugly, both teams, in the first half. I mean, Florida had 13 turnovers and a half, and Maryland had 7 in the first half. It wasn't like Maryland was protecting the basketball either. Maryland missed 3 wide-open layups in the first half. I thought their energy, though, was fine. I thought that they looked really good at times, especially when they fell behind by 11. Gillespie got super hot, hit a bunch of threes, had 15 in the first half. You know, they got Julian off earlier, Juju Reese off early. Derek Queen ended up having an outstanding game. I mean, what a season, what a moment last week. He goes out in probably his final game in college with 27 points, just 5 rebounds, all right? No double-double for him. He did not miss a free throw. He was 10 for 10 from the free throw line. He had a couple of steals. He played exceptionally well. The guy that had the roughest night that he's had all year by far, and I'm not saying that if Selton Miguel had made more shots, Maryland would have won. They lost by 16, and as the second half went on, I think Florida could have named the score with the way the game was going. But, man, we have seen Selton go off this year and have big nights. And even after starting slowly, we've seen him come back and have big second halves. In fact, what Kevin Willard did early in the second half was run a couple of plays to get Selton Miguel going. And he just could not make a shot. 0 for 7 from the floor, 0 for 3 from deep. The worst offensive night for him of the year. 0 points for Selton Miguel. You know, this is a starting five that averaged in double figures all season long. And the other four guys all went for double figures. Selton Miguel, throughout the year, averaged close to 12 points a game, and had multiple big games, big shots throughout the year. In fact, sometimes they went to him if they didn't go inside or if they didn't go to Rice. I mean, Miguel was not a bad option. They didn't have a bad option all season long. 0 points. Rough night for him. I don't think, again, that it would have made the difference in the final outcome in terms of winner loser, but it was a rough night for him. And certainly if he knocks down a couple of the looks he had, none of them were super clean, that it's probably a more competitive game than it turned out to be. It happens. I like this team all year long. It was a fun team to watch all year long. There were a lot of memories that, you know, Maryland basketball fans will take with them, you know, for years to come, to be able to discuss some of the moments during this season. You know, a 27-win season, a Sweet 16 trip. You know, some of the memories are going to be painful. You know, like the loss to Northwestern, you know, in a game which they had the ball and the lead in overtime and Jacoby Gillespie didn't get the ball across half court in time. The, you know, loss at Ohio State when Bruce Thornton knocked in a three, banked it in with 5 seconds to go, and they had a 17-point lead in that game. You know, see, Maryland just had not really lost a game this year until last night that wasn't winnable. Every loss was competitive, close. You know, they lost, you know, 7 games coming in. Basically, all of them were games that were winnable for them, that they had leads in. Obviously, the Michigan State Trey Holloman 60-footer at the buzzer will be an all-time painful memory, but you'll never forget it. And the Michigan game in the Big Ten tournament. You know, watching the, you know, length of the court after Maryland had taken the lead and watching Trey Donaldson go all the way down the court and score at the buzzer to beat the Terps 81-80. I mean, how many times do you see a team lose 4 games essentially at the buzzer or with just a couple of seconds left? Last night was not one of those games. But, I mean, the memories of, you know, a season in which they went to Purdue early and it was a great basketball game and it was really kind of the coming out party for Derek Queen. We're like, whoa, he's legit. They pounded UCLA on a Friday night in January, blew them out, had a really good win against Illinois on the road, followed by a win against Indiana on the road. Back-to-back road wins that really jump-started the move towards being a ranked team and then a top 15 team and then closing in as the season ended on being a top 10 team. They had a win at Nebraska that was thrilling. They could have scored, it seemed like, 120 against Iowa in a game. They went on the road, a place that's been a house of horrors for them over the years, at Penn State, of all places, and got a big win. They went to Ann Arbor and got a big win. They had some really great moments, and of course, in the tournament itself, and on an all-time indelible game-winning buzzer beater by Derek Queen that we'll never forget to send them to the Sweet 16. So I loved the season. I loved the team. I loved what the head coach put together. He really scored big in the portal last year. He knew what kind of construction around guys like Reese and Queen he needed, and it was a really good basketball team, and it was a fun season. It would not have been icing on the cake for them to win last night. Once you get to that spot, unless you are a true like mid-major, you expect to win. I thought they were going to win last night, even with all the, you know, shenanigans of the week surrounding this game. I thought they had a shot to win. I bet them last night. Got it at +6.5, Denton, not +6. And I realized pretty early on in the second half, it was a no-chancer. Florida's really good. I don't know if they'll go on and win the national championship. They'll be favored. What are they favored by over Texas Tech? I'm going to guess, I haven't pulled it up yet, I'm pulling it up right now. Before I look at it, I'm going to guess 6 or 7.
Have you seen it yet? The line is
6.5. How about that?
Yeah, how about that?
Pretty good at odds making. Not good at a lot of things. I'm pretty good at odds making. 6.5-point favorite, so exactly where they were over Maryland last night. The Texas Tech game, did you stay up and watch the end of that?
I did not. I should have. I watched it this morning. I mean, that was a – thankfully, I was on Arkansas, +4.5, so
I was not about that. I was one on the favorite.
But that was a tight one.
Oof. Arkansas blew a 13-point lead in the final 3.5 minutes, something like that. An incredible comeback by Texas Tech. The Duke game, we will talk about at some point. The Alabama game, record-setting last night for made three-pointers. Unbelievable display by Bama. That game, what's that number? I'm going to guess Duke 4.
Duke 6.5.
Duke is a 7-point favorite over Bama.
Look at that total. I mean, 175. Lord have mercy.
Yeah. 175. The start of that Alabama-BYU game last night was unbelievable, the pace. I think they got to the first TV timeout, and it was like 15 to 14 already or something like that. They were on pace essentially at that point for like 60 to 59 in the first half. Look, Terps, great season. Sucks that they lost. Sucks about all of the surrounding stuff. Florida was just better. A lot of people said that before the tournament. A lot of people believe Florida was the best team in the tournament going into it. We'll see how it shakes out. I certainly think they've got a chance now. They've got an injured center in Condon who got hurt early in this game. It was 15-9, I think, when he went out. He did come back in the second half, but he only played 14 minutes. You know, a guy that averaged 11-8 for them as a 6'11", center. His health will be a factor certainly against Texas Tech, but Florida was really good, really, really good. And Maryland's season is over. And now we got to deal with all this other stuff. So Kevin Willard spoke after the game. We'll play some of that sound for you and I'll weigh in on kind of where the situation is right now. We'll do that next. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980.
Kevin, I know you mentioned, earlier, can't control Twitter, can't control the media, but looking over the past week, do you wish you approached anything differently?
Not at all.
That was Kevin Willard, part of his post-game presser last night, which was dominated by questions about his future. All right, so let's get to it. I want to play a bunch of the sound. Let me just mention this before we get to it, Denton. I had a really good friend of mine who's not a Maryland guy, but, you know, follows sports in the market in a meaningful way, say to me this morning. This has been the most interesting non-game story to follow since the Snyder sale of the team. And, you know, he went on to say, I mean, you've got a team that's in the Sweet 16, a team that's got a chance to potentially win a national championship. Probably not as good a chance as we thought after watching Florida last night. And he's got 1 foot out the door, but he's, you know, kind of throwing the administration and the athletic department under the bus while he's doing it. Is he staying? Is he going? I think I said this on the show yesterday. I don't think I have had more conversations, real conversations or text conversations, with people about this in a concentrated period of time, like since nowhere near the volume of conversations since the days of the Snyder selling the team drama. It was a drama that was a national drama. All the pregame shows last night, I was watching Jay Wright intently because I was hoping that he would be asked as they previewed Maryland, Florida on TBS last night before the game. And, you know, he said, look, I am an advisor to the president of our university at Villanova. And so I hope, you know, I don't want to get myself in trouble there. And yet I've got this job. But let me just tell you, he said, this is an ongoing process. There are other people that are in, you know, in play. This is an ongoing process and nothing is a done deal yet. I tweeted that out and I said, take it for what it's worth, because do you really think Jay Wright's going to say, oh, yeah, we got him locked up? Can't say that. So I wanted to see how he handled that answer. And look, let's play some sound here. Kevin was asked about this over and over again last night. Let's start with he was asked about his future.
Having coached this group, and the follow-up would be, are you, what is your future in terms of returning to College Park? Have you made a decision whether or not you'll be back?
Yeah, I mean, I really enjoyed coaching this basketball team. They from the time they stepped on campus in June, they've just been so much fun to coach, and to kind of see them kind of grow together, have the wins we had on the road, have some of the toughest losses that I've ever dealt with, buzzer beaters, and to overcome that was huge for me. It was one of those things. It was just a whole lot of fun. The staff said it the other day. It was just kind of, there's so much fun to be around. And they accomplished a lot. You know, it's in today's world of trying to put together a roster in, you know, 3 weeks, these guys all made great, great strides. And again, the only two guys I ever played in an NCAA tournament before was Julian and Jordan. So for those guys to, you know, be great leaders and for us to get to the Sweet 16, I think it shows you how good a group of kids they were.
Okay, there was another part to that where he answered the question. Is that number two?
Yes.
Denton. Yeah, because he didn't do what he did in the presser on that made it sound like he did what he did in the presser the day before, where he just talked about one thing and completely deflected and didn't answer. He actually went on and answered the second part of the question. Here's that.
So I have not even No, I don't know what I'm doing. I'll just be honest with you. I haven't talked to my agent. I haven't talked to my wife. I made a promise to this team that I was going to just focus on this team, and that's all I've done. So I haven't talked to anybody. I have an agent. I'm sure he's talking to people because that's what agents like to do. But, you know, I don't know.
So, you know, look, I would imagine that he knows something more than not knowing anything. Do I think that he was dialed in on Florida and that coaching this team into the Sweet 16 and being out west and managing, you know, a bunch of players, et cetera, was a big part of his focus? Sure. Do I also think it's very possible that it's like his agent is handling all of it and his agent knows exactly what's going on? Of course. But whether he talked to somebody or not, it doesn't matter. The agent very likely has been handling those conversations. This was him answering, is there anything Maryland can do?
Just follow up to that. Is there something at this juncture you think Maryland can do to bring you back?
Right now, my biggest concerns in life right now, you know, I don't know who my boss is going to be. It's the guy that brought me here, who I really liked and appreciative of him bringing me to College Park, is not here anymore. And I don't know who we're going to hire. And that's, as in today's day and age, that worries me a little bit, just to be, I'm just being honest. My honesty got me in trouble. Might as well keep getting me in trouble. So this is going to be a family decision. I love College Park. I love Maryland, you know, but there's, when you're at this point in your career and you're looking at things, I have to take everything into consideration about what's going moving forward. But I have not even talked to anybody, so I don't know what I'm doing.
All right. As of yesterday afternoon before the game, I did talk to a few people that still felt like that there was a chance that that Willard could come back. I mean, my strong hunch and lean is that he's leaving for Villanova, and that we will get that announcement at some point, you know, in the next 24, 48, 72 hours. But is it impossible that he's brought back? No. Look, you know, you can't get wrapped up into Maryland fan reaction on Twitter, and especially some of those who kind of purport to be reporters and have lots of information. Anybody that's been following this story, anybody that's been talking to people, know that literally the stories have changed within a few hours with the same people over the last week. It's been a really strange situation. And again, what I would tell you is that in talking to people even before the game yesterday, I think there are people certainly at Maryland that are still hopeful that they can figure it out. And as I said to you 2 days ago, I learned this on Wednesday, and I still feel very solid in this, that Maryland has ponied up. They've gotten to where they have provided him with assurances that in addition to increased compensation, there's also increased rev share numbers to spend on players, and a lot of other things that he wants. The one thing that they can't tell him, which you heard him refer to there last night, is they can't tell him who his boss is going to be. But I would bet you that this go-around of an AD search, there's going to be an emphasis on finding an athletic director that is more basketball-friendly, maybe is the best way to put it, than recent athletic directors. I do think for a lot of people, his comments about Damon Evans last night were a bit surprising and thought to be a bit hyperbolic from his standpoint. But it's, like I mentioned the other day, it's not just him. It's the entire department and the entire university, and how it's been more football focused than basketball focused. He's not the first coach to complain about that. The last coach did, and the coach before him, a Hall of Famer, had some of those same issues. But I said yesterday that two things can be true simultaneously. One is he has the right to do whatever he wants. He's got the right to do whatever he wants, including what's best for him and his family. You know, sometimes it's more than just what he said, you know, last Thursday or what he has said since. Sometimes there are real personal issues involved in something like this. And, you know, at the same time, it isn't necessary for him to have implied and even said, as he did to me, that if he gets what he thinks Maryland needs to get for its head coach to compete at the highest levels of the sport, he'll be back. He certainly didn't need to go to that extent unless it ends up being true and he does come back and he got everything he wanted. So I still want Kevin Willard back as the coach of Maryland. I think he's a good coach. I think his reasons for being frustrated are, according to everybody, for not just the last week, but the last several years, that they are legitimate frustrations. And even though I don't think he should have implied, as I just said, or even directly stated to me, as he did on Tuesday, that if he gets everything he wants, he'll be back, I still want him back. And I understand, too, and we talked about this yesterday, there's no way to leave this time of year as a coach. It's messy everywhere when this happens. Brian Kelly, Lincoln Riley, you know, guys like that come to mind. In basketball, it's happened many times. You know, this is the wild, wild west in college sports right now. And players are bouncing and coaches are bouncing, but coaches leave all the time. That's why they have out clauses in their contract. You know, but again, the level of drama surrounding this one was initiated by him in the press conference last week. That created the S-storm of the last 7 to 8 days now. We're now at 8 days since last Thursday. But again, if he had just answered all the way, because he didn't bring it up himself, he was asked about the Villanova rumors a week ago yesterday. If he had just said, yeah, I'm not going to answer that. I'm focused on Grand Canyon. I'm really excited to get a chance to go to the Sweet 16 in a tough game, tough matchup against Colorado State. We are dialed in now that we're in the Sweet 16 on trying to go further against a really good Florida team. If he had just answered it that way and said, I'm not commenting on it, it would have been better for him in terms of the way people that are really paying attention, including people in his industry, I would imagine, felt about the way he handled it. But trust me, if he had handled it the way I just described, it's not like he wouldn't have been eviscerated had he left by the fan base, by fans. When coaches leave, they get annihilated, no matter how they go out. The irony, of course, about the Maryland situation and the Kevin Willard situation specifically is that the Maryland social media fan base, anyway, they wanted him gone 2 months ago. Can't win on the road. Can't win a close game. We made a major mistake hiring him. We sucked last year. We're not going to be any good this year. I mean, in January, they were killing him. They went on the road and they lost to Washington and Oregon in back-to-back games to start the conference schedule, or to continue the conference schedule right after the first of the year. The fans of this program, many of whom don't even show up for games, were killing him. Killing him. We got to make a change. I mean, lists were being created. Yeah, but he does have a 7-year contract. That could be problematic. I remember, Denton, at one point we talked about this when they were struggling early in January, and I said, yeah, that ain't happening. He's got another 4 years left. This school's not buying him out to bring in somebody else. That was the conversation in January. And then a couple of months later, oh my God, Villanova's interested? We can't lose him. It would be devastating to the program if we lose him. I mean, it's incredibly reactive and reactionary. Because I'll tell you this, even though I do think it will be a short-term blow, you know, as in next year, kind of punting on next year, unless some kind of miracle can be pulled out. You know, maybe you keep one of the assistants. Cox is one of the assistants who's got a great relationship with some of the players, including Gillespie and Rice, who, if you're going to have a competitive team next year, you got to bring those guys back. Got to see them back in a Maryland uniform. Maybe there's a way for that to work. I would guess that there's a chance both of those guys could be at Nova next year as Nova's starting backcourt if Willard actually leaves. But the idea that it's so damaging that you can't recover is a lack of recognition of what college basketball, college sports in general are right now, especially basketball. Because basketball, all it takes is a couple of players to totally be a different team in a, you know, in a season because you hit it big in the portal. I mean, this is annual unrestricted free agency as it currently exists. You can turn it around quickly. Maryland had a losing record last year. I think it's only the second time in 30 years that they had a losing record during a season, and they won 27 games and went to the Sweet 16 this year. Yes, a freshman recruit was a big part of it, no doubt, no doubt. But they don't go anywhere near where they went if they don't hit it big with three huge starters in the portal in Rice, Gillespie, and Selton Miguel. And so the idea that, you know, it's over, you can't recover. Short-term pain, no doubt. Long-term, depends on who you hire. And that's where I'll finish up, because I think that if he does leave, there's a chance that the way he left ultimately will benefit the basketball program. And I'll explain when we come back. We'll open up phone lines as well. 301-230-0980, 301-230-0980. You can weigh in on the game. You can weigh in on Kevin Willard. But I think if he does leave, there's a chance the basketball program could, long-term, be in a better place. I'll explain next. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980 and theteam980.com.
Tough one for the Terps last night in the Sweet 16. They lose to the Florida Gators 87-71. Derek Queen had 27 for Maryland, but their season comes to a close. Now all eyes on Kevin Willard and his future. Will he stay or will he go? Elsewhere in the nation's capital, the Nationals lose to the Phillies in 10 innings on opening day. Keibert Ruiz hit a solo homer in the fifth inning, first points of the season for the Nationals. Bryce Harper hit a solo shot in the seventh for the Phillies. Mackenzie Gore was damn near flawless. Six innings, struck out 13 on 93 pitches, a sensational performance for the guy that's going to be the ace for this Nationals team for years to come. Elsewhere in the NCAA tournament, Duke beat Arizona 193. Future Wizard Cooper Flagg had 36-7. Alabama dominated BYU 113-88. Bama shot an insane 49% from three-point range, 25 of 51. Those 25 makes set a record for the most threes in the NCAA tournament. Mark Sears had 34, and Texas Tech snuck by Arkansas 85-83 in overtime. Lady Terps in action tonight against South Carolina. They tip at 5. Wizards, eesh. Their defense did not check into the game last night. 162-109 against the Pacers, and they did not have 162. An embarrassing defensive performance. But Alex Saar had 22. Caps lost to the Wild 4-2. And that's what's trending.
If you want to weigh in on the Maryland situation, have at it. 301-230-0980. If you want to talk about the game last night, that's fine. If you want to talk about the Kevin Willard situation, which I think most of you do, that's fine as well. That's what we're talking about right now. 301-230-0980. So I think there's a chance that if Kevin Willard leaves, look, this may be a little bit of glass half full. It's typically the way I operate, not all the time. But I think what Kevin Willard brought to everybody's attention, if the university, the athletic department, the new AD, whomever that turns out to be, by the way, I would assume that the search committee for the new AD will end up looking for a new AD that understands that, you know, Maryland people really care about basketball. I mean, who knew? But what Willard ultimately, if he bolts, brought to everybody's attention, including even some people at the university and the athletic department. And the next coach gets what Kevin Willard was about to potentially get in terms of overall compensation, in terms of rev share dollars for basketball, of the rev share number, call it 20 to 21 million, whatever the percentage was that was going to go to football. Maybe it's a little bit less for football, a little bit more for basketball. I was told that they definitely increased that number in their term sheet to him, in their assurances to him that he would end up having one of the highest rev share percentages of any of the schools in the Big Ten, that the salary compensation increase would make him a top 10 highest paid coach in the game. But really, again, you know, if somebody walks into this gig with the university and the athletic department having kind of an overall better understanding of what's required for that coach to compete at the highest levels of college basketball, which Maryland should be doing, that coach could end up being the beneficiary of what the last coach ended up getting the university to understand and commit to. So who is that next coach? If we get to that, you know, I had somebody say to me last night, isn't this kind of premature? We do premature all the time in this business. Come on. I mean, the connection of the dots has been pretty easy. Do I think there's a chance that he decides to stay? I do. I think the chance is slim, very slim, like I'd put it at 10% best, probably more like 5%. But anyway, if we didn't do the hypothetical and the premature topics in sports talk, in this sports talk environment, I mean, we'd need games every night that matter, and we just don't have that every night. All right. I have seen, God, man, so many names. I saw John Calipari's name out there. Why would Calipari leave Walmart money in Fayetteville? I guess Fayetteville for the East Coast. Okay, I get that. Obviously, names like Dwayne Simpkins, who did a great job at AU, Tony Skin, who was on Kevin Willard's first staff, who's done a phenomenal job at George Mason. Those are names that are floating around there. Buzz Williams, the Texas A&M coach, his name's been bantered about. Texas A&M, don't they, Denton, pretty much pay whatever it takes? Isn't Buzz Williams way up there on the list of highest paid coaches? I believe he is. Yeah. But Maryland's willing to pay top $10 now, too, or at least to Willard. But is A&M a great basketball situation compared to Maryland? I don't know. Everything's changed. The SEC is a great basketball league. Phenomenal basketball league.
They got oil tycoon money, too. So you got, like, Arkansas that has Tyson's Chicken and
energy
Walmart
money.
Gas and oil money.
Yeah,
they got oil tycoon money at A&M.
Yeah. I think there's a list. I had this up earlier. The 30 highest paid basketball coaches in the country. Bill Self is at $9.63 million. Calipari's at $8.54 million. Izzo's at $6.2 million. Bruce Pearl at $5.7 million. Rick Barnes, $5.7 million. Scott Drew, $5.13 million. Hurley's at $5 million. Underwood's at $4.7 million. Kelvin Sampson, Buzz Williams is 11th at $4.5 million. So let me just mention, if you believe the reports, and I do, that a standing offer right now to Kevin Willard to make him a top 10 highest paid coach in the game puts him in the $4.5 to $5 million a year range. Where is he right now? $4 million a year, I think. So it would, you know, be a potential 20% increase. Just call it somewhere around there to make him a top 10 coach. Because he currently, yeah, at $3.9 million currently, he's the 19th highest paid coach in college basketball. Some of you probably say, really? For one Sweet 16 appearance? He's a top 20 highest paid coach? Yeah, it's the going rate for a program like Maryland in the Big Ten. I mean, a lot of Big Ten schools are on this list. A lot of SEC schools are on this list. So I've seen a lot of names out there. I'm going to give you two names that I would love for Maryland to consider. Number one is, I don't want them to think small. I want them to think big. You know, when they hired Kevin Willard, my number one was Rick Pitino. I said, go get Rick Pitino. Oh, they can't do that. Way too much baggage. No, Maryland doesn't do that. You know, they don't. There's no more baggage conversations in college sports. Seriously, at this point. No more worried about baggage. Now, if you're bringing in somebody that's going to be a threat to your community, you can't do that. Understood. Okay, but, you know, no more of, you know, he was paying players here, he was texting illegally here, you know, he got involved in, you know, some co-eds here. No, it's not, this is, I wanted that a few years ago. I wanted Pitino. Because you know what would have happened with a Rick Pitino at Maryland? They wouldn't have had in, you know, mid-January on a cold Wednesday night playing, you know, Minnesota or playing, you know, somebody else that's okay in the Big Ten, Rutgers or Penn State. You wouldn't have had a half-filled or a two-thirds filled arena. You'd have sold out season tickets immediately. And by the way, what does he do everywhere he goes? Wins, and usually wins big. That's not the name I was going to mention. I don't think Rick Pitino's leaving St. John's. I think, you know, he's got his winged foot and he's got all of his Hampton, you know, golf courses. He's not leaving New York. I don't think. I mean, would I look into it? Yes. Two names I thought of, all right? Actually, one name I didn't think of, but I loved when it was brought to my attention. But the guy that we've talked about him. I think Chris Beard, flat out, is a top five basketball coach in America. He is currently the coach of Ole Miss. They play Michigan State tonight in the Sweet 16. He took Texas Tech to the national championship game that they lost in overtime to Virginia. He went to Texas. There was a domestic assault allegation. He was cleared of it, but they fired him, and now he's at Ole Miss. Now, Ole Miss is in the SEC. You can't look at Ole Miss and say, well, football school, SEC, of course he would jump to Maryland. He was a big time, and I think still is, right? Is Ole Miss an Under Armour school? I think they might be. Texas Tech was. I know that. If Jimmy Patsos is listening, text me. Is Ole Miss an Under Armour school? I don't know if they are. But he's been kind of an Under Armour guy at times. He is, I would imagine that, you know, if you have cleared the way for a new approach to basketball at Maryland, I think you've got to think big. Chris Beard would win immediately. It wouldn't take him long. He's a great basketball coach. At Texas Tech, I know they're in the Elite Eight again. I mean, how is Texas Tech doing it? But at Texas Tech, I mean, he got that team to an Elite Eight. Then they were the Division I runner-up to Virginia. And then they, in his final season before he went to Texas, they lost in the round of 32 in the second round. At Texas, they were in the tournament his first year, lost a second-round game. And in his second year at Ole Miss, they are in the Sweet 16. Great basketball coach. Incredible X's and O's, the whole nine yards. I would back the truck up to hire Chris Beard. The other name, and I'll tell you who mentioned this to me, Ben Standing texted me last night and said, what about Billy Donovan? Doesn't he want back in? I would love Billy Donovan. If he wants to leave the NBA, there's been some discussions at various points in time, now that, you know, you can pay players, you know, and it's not, you know, a constant, you know, recruiting of 18-year-olds, that the portal's a bigger deal, that maybe he would want back in. Coached a game last night that was off the charts. I want Maryland to think big. Big. Because you know what? Kevin Willard wasn't a thinking big hire. He was a sought-after candidate because he had done a nice job at Seton Hall, but he was not in Pitino's class. I think, you know, you start thinking that way if you really want to be what your fan base wants you to be. All right, we'll take calls after this. Kevin Sheehan Show, The Team 980, theteam980.com.